And you're my timer guy, right? Okay. Patty Unger, alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 29th, 2002. I have a sponsor, and she's here tonight. And I have friends here tonight. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I don't really think I look like an alcoholic. I don't think I sound like an alcoholic. And I don't know what an alcoholic is. Our daughter was non-functioning when she was 19. She was, I've heard the words, I learned them in here, like tuned out and dropped out or whatever it is. Anyway, she was non-functioning. And we moved her back home when she was 19 and tried to find help for her, tried to get help for her, tried to do something. And for about 6 months, nothing changed. Anyway, she finally got into treatment. And a daytime, like 8 in the morning till 8 at night. From the first week of that, they said there's a family night and that my husband and I might benefit from coming to the family night. Well, that was the last week of December. And we had plans to go to New York City for New Year's Eve. It was my 50th birthday. So we went to New York. It was a part of a tour. And part of what I did was I, and so Jennifer was, I shouldn't say her name, well, whatever. Anyway, our daughter, was a week into treatment, and so I'm in New York with my husband, and I pack my booze for travel, so I don't have to buy it where it's expensive and, you know, straight retail. So I measure it out because I drink whiskey, and so I measure out how much I'm going to need for the nights that I'm there, and I way ran out, and also, because it was New Year's Eve, they had liquor that you could have, too, and plus then I bought liquor. But what I noticed there, it was a horrible trip. It was a horrible time, and I was so worried about her, and nothing was helping her, or nothing was working. She was really, really struggling, really sick, and all the alcohol that I drank didn't touch it. I hadn't yet been to AA, didn't know anything about it, didn't go to treatment, didn't anything. And but I just knew that the liquor I was drinking that when we were in New York wasn't touching it. And then on the New Year's Eve, when you go to Times Square or whatever, and we were drinking, well, I was drinking, my husband doesn't drink, but so I was drinking and bought drinks. And, I mean, it was like I was not even drinking anything. I couldn't, it wasn't. I had no effect, and I didn't know, you know, and I didn't know then that it had quit working, and I didn't know then, like Mike said the other night, it's like I was at the jumping off point. I couldn't live with it, and I didn't want to live without it, but I didn't know that yet because I hadn't gotten to AA, and I didn't have a sponsor, and I hadn't read the book, and, you know, I don't know those terms. I just know that that this isn't touching it. Oh, it was horrible, horrible. And yet, so I went to the family night, or we went to the family night at the place, and they said you might benefit from Al-Anon. So I mean, I didn't even, it's just like, okay, what's that? Where do I do it? Dear Abby's talked about it. I've heard of it. And so I went to Al-Anon, and then 6 weeks later, I caught alcoholism from them, and I had asked a guy in the parking lot if any people in Al-Anon ever drink, And he just busted up laughing. And he said yes, and he had a schedule for AA, and, you know, so I started going to meetings. And I was still, I drank every night. I drank whiskey. Sometimes I drank vodka. If the whiskey gave me a headache, I thought, well, it's like cheap whiskey, and, you know, I'll get different vodka. And, you know, then the kids grew up, and when I got here, the kids were grown and gone. But when I had kids and they were living at home, it's like I drank cheaper stuff. And then when they're gone, then I can, you know, spend a little bit more on the liquor. And I would buy it on sale at Rite Aid at Christmas time because it's really, really a good price. And and when you buy it by the case, you get 10% off. So... and see, I just don't think this is funny because it's just like, and so I would buy a lot, and I got rain checks because the shelves in Rite Aid didn't have that much. So I would get a rain check and they'd say, how many bottles of the 1.75 whiskey do you want? And I said 18. And that was just at one Rite Aid, because then I'd go to the other Rite Aid and get, you know, another rain check. And so I could, and so I'd bring these boxes home with six in it, and it's heavy. They were glass bottles. And then my husband dutifully, you know, with that red, what do you call it, dolly or thing, he does it downstairs, and I stack them up, and, you know, there, I've got my, and I, after I came into the rooms, I found one of my rain checks, and I've laminated it, and it's in my big book. You know, and but so I'm coming to AA, and I don't know if I'm an alcoholic or not. And but see, so I go to meetings, and people laughed when I would say I'm Patty, and I don't know if I'm an alcoholic, and. I didn't go to liquor stores every day and buy stuff, you know. It's like, and I didn't keep it in my purse, and I didn't, you know, I didn't hide it. And, you know, so it's like, I'm not doing what you're doing, and you're alcoholic, but, you know, I didn't know about alcoholism. And I was going to always two meetings a day and still drinking at night for about 6 weeks. So I'd go to a noon meeting and the same noon meeting, and then I'd go to a 5:30 meeting. These were both in El Cajon. And the people there, and I don't know if I'm an alcoholic, but I kept going, and I'd ask them, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And yeah, they would either laugh or they'd go, well, what do you think? And but what I remember, there were some tables, like those long banquet kind of tables, like outside, and people were sitting on each side of them, and I would talk, and just like now, the whole room was quiet, and people are listening, and it's like, that's odd. When I grew up, it's like, when I talked, nobody really listened, and... but there was a man down at the end of the tables, and he leaned forward, and he would look at me when I'm talking. I mean, he did it with others too, I'm sure, but, you know, and it's like he's looking, and his head was nodding up and down, and it's like he looks like he knows what I'm saying, and like he's agreeing with me. And anyway, so after about 6 weeks of a couple meetings a day, every single day, the secretary of one of the 5:30 meetings said, because then they said, raise your hand if you're a newcomer. So the first day of, you know, the noon meeting, I raised my hand because I'm a newcomer. And then the very next day, it's like, now if you're a newcomer, raise your hand. Well, I didn't raise my hand because I already did that yesterday, and I'm not, so I'm not new. And so somebody's like elbowing me and you need to raise your hand. And anyway, so, but after 6 weeks of not knowing if I'm an alcoholic, the secretary at this one meeting said, do you think that tomorrow, or do you think when you leave here tonight or something, or like tomorrow, you just don't drink tonight? And I looked around the room, and he was looking at me, and so I'm like, okay. And anyway, so that's how it started. I didn't drink that night, and I haven't had a drink since. I didn't have a sponsor till I was about 10 months sober. At 7 months, a lady that I had seen on a regular basis, I made a comment to her that I had liquor at home. And she said, "You still have liquor at home?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Get rid of it." And, but I'm not going to drink it. Get rid of it. Maybe my sister in Idaho wants it. I can sell it to her or give it to her. And she just says, "Get rid of it. Get rid of it." And I said, I can't just pour it down the drain. And so anyway, I drove home and loaded up the caravan that we had at the time and put the bottles in it and made a delivery down to the Elks Club in El Cajon. And I had... it was either 37 or I think it was 38 bottles, unopened. Yeah, unopened of Canadian Club. And, I mean, what a waste. What a waste. So, when I would get the bottle out of the cupboard, I don't believe I really started drinking till I had kids. And when I would get the bottle out, and it wasn't from drink one or, I do not know when I crossed the line. But when I would just getting the bottle out of the cupboard, I could breathe. Just getting the glass out, getting the shot glass to measure it, and my entire drinking for 30 years, every single night, was measured in a shot glass. Then when I was trying to, I don't know the words yet, control and enjoy it, then I'm trying to go, okay, now tonight I'm only going to have 2 ounces of whiskey and then 2 more ounces of whiskey and then I'll space it out and I'll add this much 7-Up and that much, 7-Up and do it smaller amounts or drink it slower, drink it faster, whatever. But I could never, never, never stick to the amount that I wanted to stick to. And I don't know why I can't stick to that amount. Why can't I why am I drinking anyway? And why can't I stick to the amount that I want to stick to? And I just want to, I could just sleep at night. It just put me to sleep. I don't know yet that I'm passed out or that I don't know what a blackout is. But I just know the relief that came instantly. The change of perception when I would take a drink. And I also know that pitiful and incomprehensible feeling of when it does nothing. And it's not happening. It's not touching it. But anyway, I sponsor it at 10 months, and she starts taking me through the steps. And I just did what she said. She told me how to do it, when to do it. I'd go to her house. We'd read the book together. I would read it. She'd tell me what to read first. She said, underline it. I mean, this is what I think she said. This is what I heard, and this is what I did. But I'm not sure it's verbatim. But she would say, underline what means something to you. Underline if it doesn't mean something to you. Underline or put a question mark if you have a question and you don't understand it or you don't agree with it, and then date it. And that's what I do, and that's what I do. I've been in a step study, a book study, since I got sober. And they've changed sometimes, different locations, different book studies. But I still do that. I still date it if something's pertinent or relevant to a certain day. And step two, came to believe a power greater than... I mean, a power greater than myself. And this one man that was in Lakeside, used to live in a dumpster, and he used to eat food out of the dumpster. He's sober, and he has a job driving caterpillars, or that big moving equipment, and he used to pick bugs off his food and off himself, and he meant like bugs, not drug bugs, and so that was before I heard of drug bugs, but anyway, and this man doesn't live that way anymore, and he's got a house, and he's got a family, and a job, and you know, it's like that's pretty powerful stuff to hear some stories of where people had been and they don't live that way anymore. And I'm a housewife. I didn't even know that people lived in... I mean, I just was so sheltered and unaware of some of the yets. Step three, made a decision, you know, to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And I did that with my spouse. I did what she said. We get down at a coffee table at her house, and she takes my hand, and, you know, I think her eyes were closed, so I close my eyes. I know the prayer by then. I've memorized. You know, I mean, I just do what she does. I just do what she does where she does it. And really interesting, because I've gotten that far with a few women, and I still remember this one woman who's not in the rooms anymore, and we're going to go in my living room and do the third step like my sponsor had done with me, and the lady's like, can't we do it over here facing out this way and over there? And it's just like, anyway, and she's not still here, so I just do what my sponsor does. I want what she has, and I do what she does. And she has some really neat bird feeders and birds in her backyard. And so I got some bird feeders and bird seed. And if I want what she has, I got to do what she does. So anyway, and I got neat birds in my yard. So anyway, and then step four, she shows me the columns, and we read through the book, and do I have any questions? And so I start doing step four. Well, I started doing it. Not that right that day, but because I don't know how to do it, and I don't know what kind of paper, and are you supposed to use a pen or a pencil, and what, you know, and what if you make a mistake, and you know, I mean, and how many pages should it be, and you know, and I don't even know what a resentment is. So I don't have any, and that word was not a word that I ever heard before I came to this program. And I don't have, and then they talk about anger, and it's like, well, I don't have anger. And because what I realize now is that my mom is extremely passive, and Dad was extremely explosive. And he bellowed, and he... the pen would fall out of his pocket, and you'd hear it at Albertson's down there. I mean, it's just every hour of every day, he was just explosive and bellowed. And so that's anger. I don't do that. And I had a very narrow definition of anger, a very incomplete definition of anger. And one man, when I was stuck on this, one of the men at the meeting, said sometimes women have success with thinking about resentment. Is like, has anybody ever hurt your feelings? And it's like, oh, yeah. And has anybody ever made you mad? Yeah. And, you know, so it was kind of verbiage like that that I could relate to. So then I started writing. Well, then I get distracted a lot. And so this wasn't coming along very fast. And so I don't even know if my sponsor said, okay, you have to. I don't think she said that. She didn't give me a deadline, I don't think, or, you know, I mean, I didn't get yelled at. So I think I just didn't want to get yelled at. But anyway, I went to Hometown Buffet in Santee and finished up this fourth step stuff because I got too distracted at home, and I can't bob up and down, but so much at Hometown Buffet or somebody's going to wonder what I'm doing. So I sat there and I finished it. And by finish it, I didn't know, like I say, I didn't know what color pencil, pen, how many people should be on there, but I knew that that I held nothing back. So I went over to my sponsor's house and I went through that with her. And then I thought, oh, then you have to look at these people the next time you go to a meeting. And they're going to be right there, and they're going to, I mean, oh, how embarrassing. And but she shared with me, and I shared with her, and she really helped me with that. I got to speed the talk along, but I learned a lot from that. And I was so relieved when it was done. I never tell somebody, it's so easy, and the directions are right in the book, and it's so clear, and it's so easy, because I don't think it is. Maybe after I've done it, it's a little easier, but I was very confused. So then 6 and 7, I never heard of a character defect till I came to this program. I don't know what those are. Then I learned also from outside help when my husband and I went to a counselor was, the counselor was like, you have a temper. And I'm like, me? And, you know, so then I look up, so I start looking up words. I mean, I had looked them up before that, but, so my definitions have gotten broader and more encompassing, and they have for the character defects too, and judgmental and critical and, self-righteous anger and, sarcasm, you know, just things like that. And steps 8 and 9, I did that with my sponsor, you know, make the list. She told me what to do, because I was a housewife and I was not employed. I barely did anything with PTA. If they needed something, it's like bake cookies, take it down there and then come home. Cause I'm just scared. You know, I'm just worried all the time. I mean, that's what drinking helped. I was worried, dread, and panic were the three emotions I could identify when I came in here. And then made the amends that I needed to make the way she told me to make them. And I hear her all the time, even if I do a tenth step today, and she says, and then leave it alone. You know, so like I don't do a big lecture or tell somebody, oh, and then, you know, I mean, I like girls can go on and on. And but I hear her head saying like this sentence, and then leave it alone. Or like with my husband, then kiss him on the top of the head or the cheek or whatever and leave the room so I won't be tempted to say more. So I do hear her voice, like, leave it, and then leave it alone. And with the tenth step, this just happened, and this is where I am today. There was a business meeting in one of my meetings, and I don't like business meetings because people are yelling. And yelling, that's what my dad did. And so there's, actually, it sounds like they're yelling. And they're disagreeing, or they're stating their opinions or their, but in this business meeting, somebody, there were different opinions, but somebody was rude and somebody did yell and it was not, I mean, it was rude. And she shouldn't have done that and I don't like her and, you know, whatever. But by the time that meeting ended, before the meeting ended and I went into the bathroom, I thought, oh my gosh, that's what that looks like, That's what that sounds like, and that's what that feels like when I do that to my husband. And I had just done it to him that morning. Like, this meeting was at 10:30 in the morning, and I had just done that behavior, been rude to my husband when I asked him a question that I already knew the answer to. And when that's how I see what it looks like when somebody else does it, when they're like, you know, and they, and just that kind of stuff, that's not nice. And it's certainly not on the, you know, pleasant to be on the receiving end of it. And by that night, well, that night when I went home, and I told Bob that, when I had asked him that question, that first of all, I had interrupted him, and he's like, oh, you did? You know, I mean, it's probably how often I do it that he doesn't even notice. But I did say that to him, and that I shouldn't, you know, that wasn't nice. I don't remember the exact words, and then leave it alone. But I need to choke out, like, and I was rude, or I was wrong, or I, you know, it's like, get stuck down there. And, but I really saw that pretty, you know, not days later. And that's step 10. And then step 11, the conscious contact and prayer and meditation. And I was so grateful when I came in these rooms, because I'm not a churchgoer, that there was one lady whose dad was a minister. And this lady was at Melody every noontime, and she would write in her book, and she was always taking notes. I'm like, well, Gladys, you sure write a lot you write in your book. She goes, well, it's my book. And, it's like, oh, yeah, because in school, if you wrote in your book, you have to buy it, you know. Anyway, her dad was a minister, and she said that God could be good direction. And it's like, your dad's a minister and you can do that and say that and think that. And I like God as like group of drunks, the G-O-D. And then some other silly guy said it could be grumpy old dude, you know, G-O-D. And, I love laughing. And, oh, gosh. The relief that comes from laughing, the relief that comes from breathing, the relief that comes from saying, I don't know, but I know people that do. And that's where I get my direction and guidance and the order for my life. And step 12, carry the message. As haven't had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, and then carry the message. Well, I'll just tell this one quick story. I'm in my first year, and I don't know, I might have just gotten my sponsor, but I hang out with a couple people, like a guy or two guys and a couple gals, and we'd go to lunch after the meeting, or they'd go to Santee for, you know, coffee or something. Well, they went out there, and I was getting a haircut, and so I was going to go meet them after I got my haircut. Well, I'm learning all about AA and, you know, hearing people's stories and the primary purpose and help another. So this guy wanders into this hair place where I'm getting my hair cut. And I had just learned what a wet one was. And this guy was a wet one. And he also was a brown bagger. So, and he didn't know where he was or really what he was wanting. And so I'm going to take him after my haircut to them, because they're across town in Santee, and they'll know what to do with him. I know my job is like, get him, grab him, you know. And so that's what I mean, I'm going to grab him quick. We're supposed to find him, round him up, and grab him. And so I call the guy, and I say, I got one for you. And he's like, wasn't near as excited. He said, no, you're not going to bring him over here. And you let him leave the poor brown bagger alone, let him enjoy his beer. And I was appalled, because that's not what you're supposed to find him, get him, and do that, you know. So anyway, that's one of my stories. It's gotten a little bit better, and my sponsor stresses to me that you never do it alone. You always take somebody else with you. And so I have gotten, better. I mean, I don't go do it alone. But anyway, thank you for being so respectful and listening and for being here for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty.